You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. And globally at WPVMFM.org.
Well, howdy, buckaroos and buckarettes.
This is WPVM 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on WPVM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. Each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone. And our guest today is Kyla Bennett. She's the Director of Science Policy for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, or PEER. Kyla first became involved with Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility in the mid-1990s when she became a whistleblower herself. She previously worked at the United States Environmental Protection Agency, Region 1, for about 10 years as a wetland permit reviewer and as the region's wetlands enforcement coordinator. She has a PhD in ecology and evolutionary biology from the University of Connecticut and a law degree from Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland, Oregon. Kyla Bennett, welcome to A Better World.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kyla is with us today to talk about what is commonly known as forever chemicals or PFAS. And before we get into that, though, tell us about yourself, Kyla, and PEER.
Sure. I actually found out about PEER, which is basically a whistleblower organization. We support and defend local, state, and federal employees who work in the environmental or health arena. And I found out about them in the early 90s when I was working at EPA myself, and I was told to change my scientific determination on a case. I refused. I was taken off of that case, and so I sued EPA with the help of PEER. And we won. And I stayed at PEER for several years. I mean, stayed at EPA for several years after that, but eventually left and came to work at PEER. So I've been with PEER now for 24 years.
So do you find, like, in the current political climate that more people are prone to keep things to themselves rather than be a whistleblower, or has that not changed over the years?
It's actually, under this Trump administration, our intakes have just exploded. We usually get, a couple every month, where we had 400 in the first part of this year. So people are angry. There's a lot of illegal action going on in the federal agencies right now, firings, suspensions, violations of law and regulation. So people are coming to us in droves. So it's kind of like drinking out of a fire hose right now. But unfortunately, the other part of that equation is that a lot of the safeguards for federal employees have broken down. The two typical avenues that federal employees have to go when they want to complain, when they want to blow the whistle, are the Merit Systems Protection Board and the Office of Special Counsel. And because of the Trump administration's actions, both of those are really not options anymore. We still have the Office of Inspector General, but Trump fired, one of the first things he did when he took office was he fired about 17 of these inspectors general, including EPAs. So they're still working. They've got an acting IG, and we bring stuff to them a lot, but they are also overwhelmed. So it's really a very difficult time for all the federal employees working in the environmental arena.
Do the unions afford any protection for people when they come forward?
Sure, the unions do. And we work very closely with the unions. But as you may or may not know, the Trump administration got rid of the collective bargaining agreement for one of the big unions at EPA. So they basically have very little power right now. So he's attacking the unions as well. So they are also overwhelmed. You know, we're all trying to help these people who are trying to dissent, who are trying to shine the bright light of day on all the things that are happening within these agencies. But it's very, very difficult. But we're not going to give up.
How do you go about prioritizing who comes to you and whether their particular topic is more relevant than someone else's?
We try to help everybody that comes to us, whether we help them ourselves or whether we can outsource their issue to someone else. So we do get intakes on things that we can't deal with just because of our, like, we don't do EEO stuff. We don't do discrimination stuff. So, but we will help those people find another law firm or another nonprofit to help them. Like I said, we try to help everybody who comes forward in whatever way we can. In this administration, we have been coordinating with other nonprofits like Government Accountability Project and Democracy Forward and, you know, private law firms even, to try to make sure that everybody is getting the help that they need.
So are there any, like, links to people in Congress that you're able to work with when people come forward?
Yes. I mean, we do occasionally bring issues to Congress, and there are certain Congress people who care very deeply about whistleblowers. But as you can imagine, this Congress is really busy trying to save democracy and save, you know, healthcare and so many other critical things that it's really hard to get their attention right now.
Well, I first learned about you in a short documentary from the nonprofit news media organization, More Perfect Union, which is like an education advocacy journalism organization dedicated to building power for the working class. And the film I saw you in was titled How Corporations Are Secretly Poisoning Our Food Supply. And it focuses on what are known as forever chemicals, or PFAS. So let's kind of look at that if we could. And what are PFAS?
Sure. PFAS is an acronym for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. And it's a very, very large family of chemicals, anywhere from, you know, 10,000 to millions, depending on how you define PFAS. And unfortunately, there is not a consistent definition of PFAS at the federal government right now. The Department of Defense defines it one way, EPA defines it another way, and they define it differently in different divisions. States define it a different way. But the bottom line is that this is a very, very large family of chemicals that they all have several things in common. First, they all have a carbon-fluorine bond between a carbon atom and a fluorine atom. And that bond is one of the strongest bonds known to humans. It's very, very difficult to break, which means that these chemicals are very persistent. They do not break down readily in the environment. And because of that, they can bioaccumulate in your body or in the bodies of wildlife, and they biomagnify up the food chain. So for example, if you are watering a garden that has PFAS in the water, it gets into the vegetables and or the grass. And if a cow eats that grass, there's even more PFAS in their body. And then when you milk that cow, there's just devastating amounts of PFAS in the milk. So it biomagnifies up the food chain that way. And all of those that we've studied really less than 1% of them, because there are just so many and it's hard to, there are more being made all the time. They're all toxic. So, you know, EPA regulates chemicals, and one particular class of chemicals that they are very concerned about are what they call PBT chemicals, persistent, bioaccumulative, and toxic. And PFAS are all of those. So it's a really a frightening family of chemicals that lead to an incredible number of adverse health effects, including cancer.
Well, in that film I mentioned, it says that DuPont and 3M have been major culprits in the use of PFAS. Are you able to share with us about their story?
Sure. So PFAS were actually accidentally, the story goes, accidentally developed in a DuPont lab back in the 40s, or even a little bit earlier in the 30s. But they also used PFAS in the Manhattan Project. So they've been around for quite a while. But once scientists realized how useful PFAS could be, and they are useful. I'm not going to deny that. They can make things waterproof, greaseproof, stainproof. They make things slippery to make gears work better and things like that. So they are very, very useful chemicals. And so once the industry realized how useful these things would be in day-to-day life, the very first thing they used them for were nonstick pans, Teflon. Teflon is a PFAS. These chemicals really became pervasive in consumer products starting in the 1950s, and now they're just absolutely everywhere. But these companies, particularly DuPont, knew that these chemicals were toxic for decades, like literally decades. And they really didn't let EPA know what they knew until the late 1990s. Now, here we are in 2025, almost 2026, and EPA still has not taken much action against these chemicals. But the breaking point, I think, was in the 1990s when attorney Rob Bellott took a case of a farmer in West Virginia. All of his cows were dying, and he was next to a DuPont plant that was discharging wastewater from its facility, and all his cows were dying. And Rob Bellott, through discovery, found all this incredible trove of documents showing that DuPont knew for decades how dangerous these chemicals were. I mean, they even experimented on their own workers. They laced cigarettes with PFAS and had them smoke. But they were seeing birth defects of, you know, workers who were pregnant. They were seeing all sorts of adverse impacts, and they kept quiet about it. And luckily, when Mr. Bellott took this case, he won, and one of the settlements were for these companies to do this big epidemiological study in these people down in West Virginia, tens of thousands of people. So because of that, we know a whole lot about two PFAS in particular, and people refer to them as the legacy PFAS, PFOA and PFOS. They are two of the most dangerous. They are the two that have been around the longest. EPA claims that they're no longer manufactured in this country, but that is not true. And they are incredibly dangerous, so dangerous that EPA last year in 2024 said there is no safe dose, zero safe dose of these two chemicals to ingest. And you can get exposed to them in one of three ways. You can ingest them, you can inhale them, or you can dermally absorb them. So because they're so ubiquitous now, virtually all of us have PFAS in our blood, and it's affecting us.
So what sorts of products, you mentioned that they're in everything pretty much. What sorts of products that you or I might use every day, where can you find PFAS?
Pretty much everywhere. Like I said, they are in nonstick cookware. They're in a lot of rain gear and anything that's supposed to be waterproof, aftermarket sprays for upholstery and shoes to make things waterproof. They're in baseball gloves, guitar strings. They're in makeup, waterproof mascara, for example. Artificial turf companies now claim that they are making PFAS-free turf. I have yet to see a lab report that supports their contention, but it has traditionally been an artificial turf, which is awful because the players are playing on it and getting it on their skin. It's leaching off and going into waterways. But the other big source of PFAS is there's a company in the United States that fluorinates plastic containers, the number two plastic, the HDPE, which is a pretty popular plastic. It's one of the most used here in this country, is the number two. And what they do is they take these containers and they put them in a chamber and they suck out the oxygen and they blast the containers with fluorine gas. And what that does is it makes the plastic impermeable. It puts a barrier layer. So aggressive chemicals, either aggressive smelling chemicals or even, you know, cleaning products or fuels, will not leach out of the plastic. But during the process, unintentionally, a lot of PFAS are made, including PFOA. And remember, PFOA is one of the two that EPA said there is no safe dose of. And these plastic containers, there are 200 million of them a year, which are going out into commerce, are used for things like shampoos and conditioners and edible flavorings and cleaning products. And the PFAS is leaching from those containers into the contents of those containers. And then people are using them. They're putting shampoo on their heads or, you know, cleaning their counters with a, you know, an orange smelling, cleaning it with PFAS. I mean, so it's getting everywhere and contaminating our recycling stream because number two plastic is one of the ones that's traditionally recycled.
So in that recycling process, do these chemicals, do they leach out? Do they get broken down? What happens to them when plastic is recycled?
It stays in the recycling stream and just contaminates the new plastic products that come out. It's very difficult to destroy PFAS. Traditionally there's one of three things done with PFAS. They're either incinerated, they're landfilled, or they're just discharged to some waterway or something. And none of those things destroy them. If they are put in a landfill, they'll leach out and get into the waterways and the soil and the ground and just be recycled back into the environment. And even incinerating them, traditional incinerators don't get hot enough to break that really strong carbon-fluorine bond. You'd have to go to a hazardous waste incinerator, and even those that get much hotter, some PFAS will survive even 2,000 degrees. So they just become airborne and, you know, go. They can travel 100 kilometers or more, and then they settle down into the, you know, soil, rain, whatever. So it's really super hard to get rid of them, and we just keep on recycling them through the environment.
Are PFAS the same thing as what is known as microplastics?
No, but there is a link. And actually, there was a fairly recent paper. So microplastics and nanoplastics are literally tiny, tiny pieces of plastic. So they are related to PFAS because a lot of those microplastics are contaminated with PFAS. They have PFAS in those tiny little pieces. So each one of those little micro or nanoplastics, which can also be inhaled, ingested, or dermally absorbed, can have PFAS. They don't all have PFAS, but they can indeed. So for example, with artificial turf, when you've got an artificial turf field that has PFAS, and there's hundreds of pounds of these micro and nanoplastics that break off every single year, those all have PFAS in them. And then they get breathed in by people who are athletes who are playing on the fields or people sitting on the sidelines. They get into the air. They get into plants. They're so small, they can get taken up into plants. Wildlife can eat them. And you see where I'm going with this. It just goes through the food chain. So they are related. And there was an article recently that showed that there's a synergistic effect, if you will, between microplastics and PFAS. So it actually is even more toxic. Plastics are toxic themselves, but when you add PFAS to them, it's like magnitudes of order worse. So it's a real dangerous combination.
And I understand that microplastics themselves can take hundreds to thousands of years to break down. I would imagine it sounds like it's the same with PFAS.
Yes, PFAS, they have different rates of breaking down, but PFAS chemistry is super complex. And even when some break down, they just break down into smaller, different PFAS. PFAS are kind of classified by their carbon chain length. And PFOA and PFOS both have 8 carbons. So there are some that are much bigger that have 12 carbons or even 14 carbons. And then there are some that are much smaller. They call them ultra short chain, like 2 or 3 carbons. But they're all dangerous. And also some of them can recombine. So one of the interesting things is that when you look at wastewater treatment plants, you know, when you flush your toilet or do a load of laundry or run your kitchen sink and do your dishes, when there's PFAS going down your drain or your body is excreting it, you're on a sewer system, it goes into that wastewater treatment plant. And when scientists looked at the amount of PFAS in the influent, the stuff coming into the wastewater treatment plant, there was much less than what's coming out, the effluent of the wastewater treatment plant. And what's happening there is that these PFAS are recombining, and there are things called precursors to PFAS. So these are smaller compounds that can glom together during the wastewater treatment process and form those really bad PFAS. So the stuff coming out of wastewater treatment plants is chock full of PFOA and PFOS. Lord, come down
and help us out. If you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Kyla Bennett. She's the Director of Science Policy for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. And you're listening to us on A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. Environment is fragile, and we've been on the gradual. Declining in a lifetime, I'll lose the battle. Get burned by volcanoes, get blown by tornadoes. Because Mother Nature signals is trying to warn NATO. We got a new terror threat, it's called the weather. More deadlier than chemical and nuclear together. It's hotter in the winter, even hotter in the summer. Jesus or Buddha, somebody come and help me. Lord, come down and help us out. Send us an angel, help us out. SOS. Okay, that's SOS, Mother Nature, from Will.i.am, from the album Songs About Girls. And today on A Better World, we are talking to Kyla Bennett, Director of Science Policy for PEER. And right now we are talking about forever chemicals. Kyla, let me ask you a little bit. You had mentioned this earlier. Could you talk about more specifically some of the health effects of PFAS, either on humans, and you talked about these cattle that were dying from the runoff from 3M and Teflon. Can you talk about the health effects?
Sure. There are a lot of them. And there's actually a really good website called PFAStoxDatabase.org, which has all the studies, both human and animal studies. But basically, what we've found so far, and we certainly do not know it all, is that some PFAS cause cancer, particularly kidney cancer and testicular cancer, but also now starting to be linked to breast cancer and brain cancer and other cancers like that, thyroid cancer. It causes immune dysfunction. So it actually, if you have a lot of PFAS in your blood, vaccines don't work as well on you, which is really scary, especially in these times of pandemics. It can cause developmental issues. It can make you fat. It can cause kidney and liver dysfunction. So it basically can affect all organs of your body, and it can cause developmental issues in children and babies. So pregnant women and children are especially vulnerable to PFAS contamination. And, you know, one of the frightening things to me is that firefighters are exposed to PFAS through their turnout gear. Those suits that they wear are impregnated with PFAS. And so many of these firefighters are getting cancer. I have a lot of firefighter clients. One of them came to me, he was 38 years old. He had testicular cancer, 38 years old. There's firefighters here in Massachusetts that have died of brain cancer. They have a much higher cancer rate than the general public. And Dr. Graham Peasley at Notre Dame University did a bunch of work on their turnout gear and found how much PFAS was in there and how much was in the dust in the firehouses because they hang up their suits there. So, you know, here we are killing our first responders. It's really, really heartbreaking.
So how many people do you think, I mean, doesn't seem to me, of course, I'm ignorant about it, you know, until this interview, but how many does the public know about all these harmful things?
I think more people are becoming aware. It's becoming more of a household word. You know, John Oliver did a piece on PFAS. Mark Ruffalo, the actor who they did a movie about Rob Ballot's case called Dark Waters. And I would urge any of your listeners, if they want to learn more, it's kind of a docudrama. So it's got actors in it, but it stayed very true to the real story. Mark Ruffalo played Rob Ballot in that movie, and he's a huge advocate fighting against PFAS in Congress and elsewhere. So I think more people are aware of it. People should watch Dark Waters, that movie. And you can just Google it and a ton of stuff will come up. Mm. And even we have PEER has a bunch of clients right now in Texas that are going through the same thing that this West Virginia farmer went through with Rob Ballot. Their cows are dying. These two farms, they didn't, and where they're getting it from is not from a DuPont or 3M factory, but from biosolids. So remember when we were talking about wastewater treatment plants and I said how much PFAS there is in the wastewater. Well, most people don't know that that wastewater, the water is taken out, and those solids are called biosolids. It's a euphemism for sewage sludge. But millions of tons of that sewage sludge is spread on farms as fertilizer. Now, organic farms are not allowed to use biosolids, but conventional farms are. And in Texas, our clients, the farm across the street from them spread biosolids, and it all came downstream to them. They had fish kills. They've had 56 cows die. They've had horses die. Their dogs died. They're getting sick. We are actually suing EPA to regulate PFAS and biosolids. And these farmers have also hired a private attorney, and they're suing the company that has made these biosolids and are spreading them on farmers' land. So when you're getting people in Texas and Oklahoma concerned about stuff like this, I think the word is getting out, but we still have a lot of work to do.
How is PEER involved in that situation, that if you are involved in that lawsuit?
Yeah, we are suing EPA. So under the Clean Water Act, the Environmental Protection Agency is supposed to regulate toxic chemicals that are in biosolids. And so far, they have only regulated 9 metals, nothing else. And they have had this information about how toxic PFAS is for years. So we are suing them and trying to get them to start regulating PFAS in these biosolids, because the worst thing we could do, the best way to poison Americans, is to spread this stuff on our food supply. I mean, it's crazy. Actually, right before President Biden left office on January 17th of 2025, EPA released a draft risk assessment on those two legacy PFAS, PFOA and PFOS, in biosolids. And they basically said that any amount more than 1 part per billion, which is 1,000 parts per trillion, of these two PFAS in biosolids would be a risk to the farmers. Now, it was a draft risk assessment. It doesn't have any regulatory teeth, but it was a good indication that this stuff is really dangerous to put on the farm fields. I have yet to see a sample of biosolids that has a less concentration of PFOA or PFOS than that standard. So that if that became a regulation, it would in effect ban most biosolids from being land applied. And some states, so far, 2 states have banned the land application of biosolids because of this concern, Maine and Connecticut. Maine has lost dozens of farms. They've had to close down dozens of farms because of PFAS contamination. Now, do I think the Trump administration is going to finalize this risk assessment and issue regulations? Absolutely not. In fact, the Republicans in the House tried to sneak a provision in the appropriations bill that said, you know, thou shalt not finalize this draft risk assessment or enforce it or implement it. So they clearly have no appetite to do anything about this problem.
Is that because of pressure from corporations?
Absolutely. 100%. And also, the other problem is, you know, what are they going to do with it? I mean, that's what EPA keeps saying to me. Well, what do you want us to do with it? I mean, that's not my problem. obviously, it is a problem, and it has to be something that's solved. But spreading it on our farm fields is probably the worst option that I could think of, other than just ingesting it directly.
How long, is there any way to tell how long this sewage sludge has been converted into fertilizer and used? How many years?
Decades. It's been going on since the 1980s.
Are there certain states where this is more of a problem for farms?
I think it's a problem in all the states that use it, but the ones that have started looking, Michigan, Maine, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, and Texas, and Oklahoma, they are well aware, and New Mexico, those states have been looking. There are some scientists who say, oh, it's just a problem in a few states, but no, it's just because nobody else has looked, you know. But that's the, you know, these days people say, if you don't count the COVID cases, it'll go away. Or if you don't measure the carbon dioxide in the air, then climate change isn't a problem. So if you don't measure the amount of PFAS in your soil or your water or your food supply, then it's not a problem. If we look, we will find it. So it's a problem for all farming states, every single one.
So just to kind of make it simple for someone like me, once that fertilizer is spread on the farm, how does it end up getting into plants and into the animals that end up on in the supermarket.
Sure. It's just taken up. So some PFAS love water and they'll go into the groundwater or into a stream. So in our farmer's case in Texas, our clients, they had a stock pond where they were growing catfish for sale. But they also had their cows drink out of this pond. And the pond was highly contaminated from the neighbor's use of biosolids. So the animals actually drink it, and it gets into their body that way. Some of these are just taken up by the soil. They stay in the soil, not in the water. And plants will take them up. I mean, you know, remember, these are tiny, tiny little chemicals. Plants take them up. And then the cows, for example, will eat them. We had... you know, remember EPA said no safe dose of PFOS and PFOA? We found in one of the stillborn calves that was born on this farm, 610,000 parts per trillion of PFOS in this calf liver. 610. So remember, this poor calf had never, he or she got all of its nutrients from its mom. And the mom was drinking the water and eating the grass, and it just biomagnified up to that level. Now, one thing I didn't say yet, which I should have, is that there are existing rules about the amount of PFOA and PFOS and four other PFAS that can be in drinking water. EPA finalized this rule in 2024. The Trump administration is rescinding part of it and delaying implementation of the rest. But as of now, municipalities, public water supplies are going to have four parts per trillion or less of PFOA and PFOS in the water. Otherwise, they will get fined. Now, four parts per trillion, remember I said this calf liver, which people eat, had 610,000 parts per trillion. The fish, which people eat, had 57,000 parts per trillion of PFOS and 57,000 and 74,000 parts per trillion in two different fish. I mean, it's not safe to eat these products.
There's ever any question about why cancer rates are on the rise or people get cancer? You don't have to look very far.
You
to
do
find
not.
Out.
Yep, absolutely.
Are there any laws on the books that require farmers to stop farming once these forever chemicals are found in the soil? For instance, in Texas.
No, there aren't. And well, so there was one farmer in Michigan, Jason Grostick, where the state made him shut down his dairy farm because there was too much PFAS in his milk. Our Texas clients have voluntarily shut down their farm because they don't want to poison their neighbors. But a lot of farmers don't want to test for the fear of finding out. But there is no one in the U.S. has limits on food. So in other words, if you go to the grocery store right now and test eggs off the grocery shelves or, you know, Cheerios or whatever, anything, you're probably going to find PFAS in virtually all the foods. That's how prevalent it is. The amounts will vary widely. I think a lot of people are scared to even put those limits in place because right now all we have is limits in drinking water. That's it, just drinking water. But, you know, when you eat food and you drink water, it all goes into the same place in your body. It's just as dangerous if you eat it versus drinking it. Organic vegetables tend to have less PFAS than conventionally grown because of the biosolids issue and also because there's a lot of PFAS in pesticides and organic foods are not allowed to use pesticides.
That's Kyla Bennett. She's Director of Science Policy for PEER. Kyla first became involved with PEER in the mid-1990s when she became a whistleblower herself. And we'll be back with Kyla in just a few minutes after this break.
Some of them were fools. We were making plans
Okay, welcome back. That's Jackson Browne singing Before the Deluge from his album Late for the Sky. And today we are talking to Kyla Bennett, Director of Science Policy for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. And you're listening to us at A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. Kyla, before the break, you've been talking about forever chemicals that are in fertilizer that are used on farms. And you had mentioned about the state of Maine has outlawed the use of this fertilizer. Was there a lot of pushback from manufacturers of the stuff prior to that ban going into effect?
Yeah, it's interesting. We're seeing, you know, there are states who are really filling the regulatory void that EPA has left in its wake of inaction. And we are seeing American Chemistry Council and chemical companies showing up at some of these state hearings arguing that, you know, if we ban PFAS, then the economy is going to collapse and the world is going to come to an end and all of that. So they are focusing on the states because they've got Congress well in hand. they don't have to do anything. The U.S. Congress is not going to help on PFAS these days. So they are putting their attention toward the states. But yeah, Maine was ahead of the nation here. And, you know, Maine was lucky because for those who are familiar with its geography, it's a fairly large state for New England, at least. And with a low population. So they have a lot of landfill space. So what they're doing with these biosolids right now, because they have no other choice, they're landfilling them. But at some point, they're going to run out of room in the landfill. So we really need to figure out a better solution. And to me, that solution is the federal government needs to define PFAS broadly and comprehensively and regulate them as a large family of chemicals instead of on this individual chemical by chemical basis, and ban all non-essential uses. And when that happens, it won't be in our consumer products, so it won't be in our waste, so it won't be in the biosolids. That's the solution. And it seems pretty simple, but I have very little faith that that's going to happen anytime soon, and definitely not under this administration.
And if that sludge goes into a landfill in Maine, I mean, it's still can get into the environment, right?
Yeah, it goes into, you know, most landfills have like leachate ponds where which is just garbage juice, right? So when it precipitates, when it rains or snows, the liquid goes through the landfill and it picks up a lot of the chemicals. And then there are these leachate ponds. You could actually treat that leachate, you know, but think about it. Like my town here in Massachusetts, because I've been a PFAS warrior since 2018, and I was the one who discovered PFAS in my town's water supply. So we were one of the first towns in Massachusetts that put in a municipal treatment plant that brings it down to below the levels of what EPA is requiring right now. But we have to change that filter once a year. Costs $1 million to change that filter once a year. But what happens to that filter? It either has to go to a landfill or it has to get incinerated, and you're going to release the PFAS back in the environment. So again, all of this argues for stopping putting PFAS in the environment because we're just recycling it. And every year we're making more and more and more, and we're putting more and more into the environment, to the point where 98% of Americans have PFAS in their blood. They're finding it in the Arctic Circle and polar bears. They're finding it everywhere. It's in our rain. It has to stop.
You mentioned a little bit earlier about the EPA and how the government is now kind of walking back some of their attempted restrictions they were putting on PFAS in drinking water. I read in a recent article of yours where the current administrator, Lee Zeldin, said that the EPA would actually rescind some recent safeguards and postpone the compliance deadline for others. Can you talk about that and why is that happening?
Yeah, so that was the April 2024 MCLs, maximum contaminant levels of six PFAS in drinking water that EPA put out. And they said that the goal for PFOA and PFOS was zero because there is no safe dose. But because of technological concerns and the ability to get it down to zero with filters, they put the limit at 4 parts per trillion, which is a minute amount. And it just goes to show how toxic these things are. And then they had other limits for 4 other PFAS. So what Lee Zeldin's EPA is saying they're going to do is they're going to rescind the limits on the 4 other PFAS. They said they're going to keep the limits on PFOA and PFOS, but they're going to delay implementation so that, you know, it'll be years before people will have to come into compliance with that rule. Now, that's all under the Safe Drinking Water Act, and the Safe Drinking Water Act does have a provision which is called the anti-backsliding provision, which says that you cannot make things weaker. You know, if there are final rules, you can't say never mind and get rid of that rule. That's illegal. So they will be challenged in court, but think about our Supreme Court and what might happen there. You know, so I'm not confident that those limits will end up standing, which is really unfortunate.
I guess I don't understand the thinking along this. I mean, these are people just like you and I. They have to drink the water, eat the food, and use the products. Do they not even kind of draw a correlation between themselves and what they're doing at this level?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it's something that keeps me up at night. I don't know the answer to that. The only thing I can think of is that they think they can buy their way out of it, and in some way they can. You know, they can get great filtration, expensive filtration systems for their houses. They can, you know, buy only organic food or have their own. You know, like look at. Zuckerberg has his own underground bunker. I'm sure he's got all sorts of cleaning systems and clean food. So the really rich people can minimize their risk for PFAS. But I think for most of them, they just don't believe science. They just don't think that it's as bad as we say it is because, you know, you've got places like the American Chemistry Council saying, oh, PFAS aren't so bad. There are good ones and bad ones, and we're no longer using the bad ones, so nobody has to worry. They actually had something on their website. It's probably still there, which likens PFAS to berries. And they said, you know, blueberries and raspberries and strawberries are nutritious and delicious, and holly berries are poisonous. Should we ban all berries? No, because then we'd lose the, you know, the bottom line here is that because we have discovered the toxicity of less than 1% of this class of chemicals, just because we don't have the data doesn't mean it's safe. You know, there's a saying in science, which is the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence. You know, we have an absence of evidence. In other words, we don't have the studies yet because it's really hard to do these epidemiological studies to show how dangerous these PFAS are, how toxic they are to humans. It's difficult to do those studies. So just because we don't have the answers doesn't mean it's safe. Mm-hmm. It just means we don't yet know. But because of the common characteristics of these chemicals, all of them in this huge family, we have to assume that they're all bad. And everyone we've studied so far is bad. So the evidence suggests that we should be cautious, use the precautionary principle, and be very, very careful on the whole class before we, you know, before we start saying, yeah, go ahead and use that. Mm-hmm. And a good example of that is Gen X. There's a PFAS called Gen X, which was developed by Chemours to, and 3M maybe, I don't quote me on that. I'm not sure which company, but Gen X was supposed to be a safe substitute for PFOA. It turns out it's just as toxic. You know, just because somebody develops a new one and we don't have data on it doesn't mean it's safe. It just means we don't know yet.
And as long as there is this government attack on science, it seems like it's going to be even stay difficult to try and prove these things and get them out of our production and our systems, environmental systems and such.
Absolutely. You know, and the Carolinas are on the forefront of this fight, too, with Chemours. You know, the Clean Cape Fear people, Emily Donovan and those people, they've been doing a fantastic job trying to bring attention to this problem. They are highly contaminated, a lot of very sick people, and that's from the wastewater discharges from these plants, and mostly Gen X in the Carolinas. And part of the reason that, you know, like Georgia has a big problem too from all the carpet business down there, because a lot of these carpets are impregnated with PFAS to prevent stains. It's like a stain resistant thing.
I have one more question about the fertilizer. If these chemicals are in the fertilizer that some farmers use, this sewage sludge, is it also in things like home fertilizers that we might go to Home Depot and buy a bag of fertilizer for our home garden?
100%. So if you are buying fertilizer from Home Depot or Lowe's or, you know, your local garden store, read the label and make sure it does not say biosolids or sewage sludge or wastewater treatment plant, because there have been studies done on those bagged biosolids sold at those stores, and it comes from the same place that these farmers are getting these big loads from. So yeah, be very, very careful.
Question just popped in my mind when you said you help prove, or you were responsible for proving the presence of PFAS in your water supply where you live. I mean, is that, you're a scientist, is that something that people in their local community should take up? I mean, what's the line of action for people?
So the EPA has a rule, and every few years they make public water supplies over a certain size. I think it's over 10,000 people. That serve over 10,000 people, they make them test for several PFAS now. So those results are available on either, well, for now anyway, either on EPA's website or on your state's website. So people can check their town for PFAS levels. And it also should be coming out in your water reports. Like I think every town gets an annual water report in the mail or on the web or whatever. And they are supposed to be measuring, I think it's, they're measuring at least six PFAS, I think more. And you, most towns are not filtering their water yet because these regulations that are final and put in place are not yet implemented. They've got a delay before they're being implemented to give towns and cities time to put in a filtration plant and find the money for this. So people could look, you don't have to go and test your water yourself unless you have a private well. And then I would urge you to probably just get a filter that takes out PFAS rather than testing, because a filter is going to be cheaper than the test. The test is very expensive. But yeah, you should be looking and talking to your town water department and saying, hey, when are we getting these municipal filters up? Because this is scary stuff. In my town, before our filter came online, they had a water station at the water department, a big machine that had a filter. So people would come with jugs of water because we couldn't drink our tap water. And they'd just fill them up and take them home. And, you know, you need to feed your dogs and cats filtered water, make your ice with filtered water, your coffee, cooking noodles, anything that absorbs water, rice. It's, you know, you really need to be careful, because if there's PFAS laden water coming out of your pipe, out of your tap, think about all the places, how that water you're showering in it, and it's getting through your skin. Yeah, it's scary. You need a filter.
Watering your vegetable garden?
Absolutely.
All sorts of things.
Yep, absolutely.
Don't go near the water, children. See the fish all dead.
That's Kyla Bennett. She's Director of Science Policy for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina.
From the fountains and the mountains comes water running cool and clear and blue. And it comes down from the hills, and it goes down to the towns and passes through. When it gets down to the cities, then the water turns into a dirty gray.
Okay, that's Johnny Cash singing Don't Go Near the Water from his album Ragged Old Flag. Today we are talking to Kyla Bennett, Director of Science Policy for PEER, and we've been talking about forever chemicals, also known as PFAS. Are there any companies that have started working towards minimizing the amount of products they carry that have PFAS in them? Although I would think it's nearly impossible for them to do so, but I think about companies like Home Depot, Lowe's, they carry a multitude, countless number of products.
Yeah, there are some companies that are making strides to get PFAS out of there. For example, Keen, which is a shoe company, They've removed PFAS from their shoes. So I buy my hiking boots from them. I try to get, you know, and there's a rain gear company called Jack Wolfskin, which got all the PFAS out of theirs. There's a fabric called Dyneema, which is waterproof without being, without PFAS, without fluorinated chemistry. And they make backpacks and tents and all sorts of things. Home Depot and Lowe's have pledged to, they actually have removed all PFAS from their carpet. So you, if you buy your carpet from Home Depot or Lowe's, it does not have PFAS in it, allegedly. That was their pledge, and they allegedly complied with that. I haven't tested it, but that's what they say, which is, you know, good for them. And there are other big companies like, you know, Patagonia and REI that are striving towards getting it out of their products. There are some makeup companies that don't use PFAS. So yes, there are companies that are trying, but as you said, it's difficult. And, you know, some people say, well, I want my waterproof mascara, or I want my guitar strings that, you know, are slippery, or, you know, whatever it is. It's a convenience thing. But I mean, and that's really the bottom line is, for me, if it's essential, like if it's a medical device or even a pharmaceutical, there are drugs that are PFAS, like Flonase is a PFAS, Prozac is a PFAS. You know,
Flonase is, so if you're spraying this up your nose, you're correct. Getting those chemicals.
Correct. And a lot of the flea and tick products have PFAS in them. So, you know, you have to figure out what's essential. I personally don't think waterproof mascara or guitar strings is an essential use for even nonstick pans. I think it can be taken out of so many of our products. And then we should work towards medical devices and COVID masks and Flonase and Prozac and those drugs. We should work for alternatives that are non-fluorinated. But it would be much easier to just stop all of the convenience stuff. I'd rather not have the convenience and not get cancer than have my waterproof mascara and die of brain cancer. You know, to me, that's a no-brainer.
Right. So I have to ask you, do you ever get discouraged in your work?
All the time. I do. But it's not in my nature to give up. And I actually, right at the beginning of the pandemic in the spring of 2020, I was very ill, and, you know, everything had shut down. It was in March of 2020. Everything had shut down. Remember, everyone was at home. Everything was closed. And I was getting these telehealth appointments. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. And eventually, 2 months later, they figured out that I had a brain tumor. And I ended up in ICU in Boston Hospital for over a week by myself, because nobody was allowed to visit, having two brain surgeries. And they did genetic testing on me, there was no reason that I got this brain tumor. They said it was definitely environmental. I asked them if it could be PFAS, because I'd been drinking my contaminated water for decades here. And they said, yeah, it could be. We'll never know. And that kind of galvanized me a little bit more. You know, I was pissed. I was angry. And when I talk to my clients who are sick, who have cancer, or who are ill from PFAS, it gives me strength in a weird way to keep on fighting, even though I know how difficult a fight and how impossible a fight it may be. But I feel like people need to be given a choice. You know, we should be able to say, no, I don't want to buy that because I know it has PFAS in it. But also, I don't want you to buy that because you're contaminating me. I mean, it's really not fair, like for my farmers in Texas, for example. They didn't spread those biosolids. They were completely innocent. They didn't want to use biosolids. And yet they are the ones suffering. That's not fair. And I know life isn't fair, but we should make it more fair.
Getting close to the end here, I wanted to ask you, I read somewhere in your work about an organization called the Green Science Policy Institute. Could you talk mm-hmm. about them and what they have to offer in this field?
Sure. They're a great organization. They're out in California. Arlene Blum, who's a famous scientist and mountaineer, was their executive director. And they do a lot of work on, they have a lot of scientists, PhD scientists, working on the dangers of PFAS and exposing these things and telling people what's safe and what isn't. They're a nonprofit, great nonprofit that does great work for that to try to raise awareness and help protect people. Again, filling that void that EPA has left in its wake.
And they have some sort of list that's available for PFAS-free products?
They do. They have a great website that has a list of, I think it's called PFAS Central, or I can't remember what it is. But if you go to Green Science Policy, they have a list of products that in all sorts of categories, whether it's apparel or, you know, pots and pans or whatever, and you can find PFAS-free products. And the other group that also has a good list is, well, there are actually two more. The Ecology Center out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, has tested a lot of the nonsticks bakeware and frying pans. And then there's a woman who runs Mamavation, and she tests for PFAS and a lot of things too, and puts out lists, and she puts, you know, she actually gives you the levels so you can try to choose the one that has the lowest amount. So there are nonprofit groups out there that are trying to educate the public.
Do you have any recommendations as to how people can get involved in trying to make a difference and helping to get rid of these chemicals?
Absolutely. Educate yourself. Go to some of these websites of some of these groups, PEER or Green Science Policy or the Ecology Center, or any of these groups who are working on PFAS issues. Educate yourself. Go to your local town meetings or board meetings or whatever and ask them what they're doing in the town to minimize PFAS exposure. Fight artificial turf fields that are proposed for your community for those that have PFAS. Make sure that they're PFAS free. Again, I have not seen one yet, but people claim that they're out there. You know, just get involved locally. Call your representatives at the state and the federal level and say, this is something that I'm really concerned about. You know, try to buy organic as well. I know that sounds like a very privileged thing to say, but these days, you know, Trader Joe's, Aldi's, Target, Walmart. Walmart actually has a pretty big organic section. So it's more, organic produce is more accessible these days than it used to be. But you will minimize your risk if you do buy organic. But yeah, try to get involved at the local and state levels.
Any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah, the only thing I'd like to say is that this is an issue that transcends politics. It should transcend politics. We have a really interesting bedfellows here with very red, deep red state people and liberal blue state people working together to try to help all of us, because this is not, should not be a political issue. This is something that affects everybody. And as we spoke about earlier, nobody can escape it. And all we want is we want to give people the choice to avoid PFAS if they can and to minimize their own risk. And it's going to be a big fight, but we should all be involved, because whether you know it or not, it is affecting you.
I want to thank Kyla Bennett, Director of Science Policy for the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Kyla, thank you so much for being on the show today, and all the best in your work.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next time on A Better World. And we're going out today with Cat Stevens singing Where Do the Children Play from the T for the Tillerman album.
Taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, as you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the children play? Petrol gas.